This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey. Over the course of the past four Mishnayos, the Mishnah presented 10 Ovos HaTumah, the sources of Tumah, in order from the least to greatest capacity to transmit Tumah to other things. Our Mishnah presents another 10 levels of Tumah, also in order of your least to greatest level of restrictiveness. These 10 levels of Tumah all concern the states of Tumah that emanate from something that happened physically in the person's body. For example, a man who becomes a Zav, which is where he experiences at least two bodily emissions or similar to seminal emissions, halacha is that he is then Tomei as a Zav. In order to become pure, he has to observe Shiva Nikiyim, seven clean days, for many further instances of a Ziva's flow, whereupon he goes in the mikvah, and then by Harf Shemesh, by nightfall, he is Tahar again. Now, if there were three Ziva's flows within a period of 3 days, well, then for the purification process, in addition to what we described above, he, the day after day seven, would have to bring a carbon, a pair of birds, an ola, and a chattis. This is also true of the Zava, the female version of Zav. This is where she menstruates during the 11 days following the 7 Nida days. If this continued, this happened under 3 consecutive days, she becomes a Zava Gedola, and also follows the same procedure. She has to observe 7 clean days, and go in the mikvah, wait for nightfall, and then bring a carbon the following day. Also, Yoledes, a woman who gave birth, follows a similar type of structure involving, you know, waiting a period of time, going in the mikvah, and waiting for nightfall, and then bringing a carbon the following day. And this is also true of the mitzara, if somebody becomes tamei, because he contracted a halachic tzaras, there's a waiting period, many other steps that have to happen. But you have those three critical elements of immersing in a mikvah, then waiting for nightfall after the required waiting period, and then bringing a carbon the following day. Only upon bringing that carbon, that kapara, does the person achieve complete ritual purity. So these are all cases where the Tumah state requires a carbon. It's certainly not true of all Tumah states, but we refer to a person who does require a carbon to complete the purification process, but who is waiting for that final step as a Mechusar Kippurim. When it was lacking just the atonement component, such a person, the Mishnah will state, is on the lowest level of Tumah, based on the fact that all the other purification steps have happened, the waiting period, going in the mikvah, waiting for nightfall, just that one step, bringing a carbon, so this person still has a minor state of tumah, the least restrictive kind of tumah. And so we begin, Esra tumos parshus mina adam. There are 10 levels of tumah, on different levels in terms of the restrictiveness of the tumah, and all of these types of tumos emanate from the person, him or herself. It's based on something that happened with the body. And we can present these 10 levels, starting with the least restrictive one. That would be the Mechusar Kippurim, the person who contracted a type of Tumah that requires a carbon at the end of the purification process. Say, for example, a Yoledes, and where the person did everything required up until that point already, the status of such a person is Asur Bakodesh. The Mechusar Kippurim person, until she's brought her carbon, may not partake of meat of a carbon yet. But umutter betruma ubemeiser, the person who is tame merely on the level of Mechusar Kippurim may, at this point already, partake in truma. So if he or she is a kohen, the person could have truma, and the person may partake of meiser sheni. A fully tame person, as we'll see, may not partake of these things. But once again, since this person is almost there, it's just one step left, just the kapar, the carbon, to complete purity, the person is pure enough, so to speak, to partake of items of lesser holiness than an actual piece of a carbon, like truma and maaser sheni. This halacha, along with all the other halachos, the Mishnah will state, are derived from the psukim. Next, we have chazal lios tefilyo. So the Mishnah makes it a case where the same person who bounces between these different levels of tuma. So let's say it was the same person who became tamei all over again, but the person began the purification process by immersing in a mikvah. But it's still the day the person immersed in the mikvah. At that stage, we describe that person as a tefil yom, person who became tameh and then immersed in the mikvah, but is still waiting for nightfall, which, depending on the tumah, will either complete the purification process or bring the person one step closer to becoming completely tahar. When at the tefillah yom stage, aser bakodesh ubatruma may not partake not only of a piece of a carbon, but even truma umutar b'maiser. One who is tamei on the level of tefillah yom may partake of maiser sheni. If let's say chazal lios balkari, say it was a man, and he then became a balkari. He had a seminal emission. And so in contrast to the male Zav, who has to first observe 7 days free of any additional emission, the person who became a Balkari has a tumah that lasts only for 1 day. He can go to the mikvah that day, and then by that night he will be Tahar. But here the person who became Balkari became Tameh, and he is yet to immerse in the mikvah. He didn't even begin the purification process. The Mishnah rules of such a person, Asr Bishlashtan. He may not have any of the three holy foods we mentioned. Not a piece of a carbon, not a piece of truma, not even a piece of maaser sheni. The Mishnah says, let's say chazer lios boal nida. Let's say this person then had relations with a woman who was a nida. She had menstruated and not yet purified herself of that tumah status of nida. Aside from the fact that in doing so, the man committed a kares level sin, this also, as we learned previously, makes him tame. A similar level to the Nida herself, such that he not only, of course, cannot partake of any holy food before he purifies himself, but he has the capacity to make other things or other people. Tameh is considered an Avatumah, whereas the Balkari is only a Rishon Latumah. So, you know, the previous case, he can only be Metameh food, but not people or utensils. The Baal Nida could be Metameh even utensils or people. Not only that, Metameh Mishkav Tachton Ke'elyon. If he puts his weight on something that's meant for resting on, say, a mattress, even if he doesn't directly touch it, then it becomes tame. To the same degree that a similar type of object, mattress, would become tame if they were placed upon a zav, which is just a roundabout way of saying that the object that's, again, meant for lying on, if the Baal Nida puts his weight on that, even without directly touching it, then that mattress or whatever it is becomes Tameh on the level of Rishon L'Tumah. Then we go up to a more strict level of Tumah. The Mishnah says, if Chazer Lios Zav Shirosh De'Rios, let's see, then this man experienced 2 zivas bodily emissions. The halach is Metameh Mishkav U'Moshav. He makes a Tameh, something he lies or sits on if the object is meant for that purpose. But not only that, the Mishkav or Moshav object itself becomes an Avatoma. So that's unusual. Usually, if you have a source of Toma and that touches some object, the object becomes Rishon L'Toma. It's 1 degree away from the original Toma. It's a weaker Toma. But no, the Zav has the power to make other things, if he lies on those things, into themselves Avos HaToma, which practically means that that, let's say, mattress now, if that touched even a utensil or a person, then that utensil or person will become Tameh. Another additional requirement when it comes to the Zav, in contrast to the Baal Nida or Baal Keri in previous cases, is that Vitzarach Bias Maim Chayim. The only way the Zav can purify himself is if he immerses himself in a natural spring. He cannot purify himself by immersing himself in a mikvah, you know, standing rainwater. It's got to be specifically Maim Chayim. Normally, a person could purify himself in either one, either a mikvah or Maim Chayim. The Zav, the Pasuk tells us, requires specifically Maim Chayim. However, since he only experienced 2 zivas emissions, upatur min hakarbon, he's not required to bring a carbon as part of his purification process. The Mishnah says, Rosh Shalosh, if the man experienced 3 zivas emissions, chayv b'karbon, then a carbon is part of the purification process. It's to bring 2 burnt offerings at the end of the process to completely rid himself of the tumah. The Mishnah continues, let's say this man, Chazer Lios Mitzora Muskar, found himself a confined Mitzora, meaning a patch of what seems to be Tzaraas sprouted on his skin, came to the Kohen. Kohen said, we need to put you in quarantine to wait and see if your symptoms develop in a way that you can be diagnosed as a confirmed Mitzora. As soon as the Kohen makes the determination, in other words, the Kohen doesn't say, oh, what's on your skin is definitely not Tzaraas. If he says it might be Tzaraas, you have to go into confinement for a week and then we'll check again. As soon as that verdict is issued, the man becomes tame. He's now a source of tumah on a very high level, to the point that he not only transmits tumah through magar masa, if something else comes into direct contact with him or something else bears his weight, but mitama bibia, he could even transmit tumah to other things or people just by virtue of being in the same house as those other utensils or people. However, as this man has not yet been deemed a confirmed mitzara, upater min hapriya umina prima, he's exempt from the requirement to let his hair grow and from tearing his clothing, umina tiglachas umina tziporim, and from the rituals involving shaving the hair of his body and the two birds. All of these rites that are described over Parshios Tezri and Mitzara do not apply to the Mitzara Muska, the confined Mitzara. Again, the idea is we don't know yet if he's actually a Mitzara. The Mishnah says, "Vim hayom muchlat chay bakulan." Should this person be deemed by the Kohen a confirmed Mitzara, then all of the aforementioned restrictions and procedures apply. That is, as long as he's a Mitzara, he can't cut his hair, and he has to tear his clothing as if he were a mourner. And once his tzaras heals, he has to undergo a purification process involving shaving his body at different points. And at the beginning of that week-long procedure, a ceremony involving two birds, these become relevant to a Mitzara Muchlat, a confirmed Mitzara. The Mishnah says, if perish mimenu aver she'ina lav basar karoy, if let's say then terrible thing happened, the limb of this person was severed. The halacha is that the human limb is, in a sense, treated like a human corpse in terms of the laws of tumah, but a distinction is drawn when it comes to a single limb from a person, which is that it has to be considered a complete limb in order for it to be as potent a source of tumah as a complete corpse. Specifically, the bone has to be there, as well as the sinew, and there has to be a certain amount of meat, flesh, is still on the limb. So the Mishnah starts out with the case where there's an insufficient amount of flesh that remains. And what that minimum amount is will be discussed later in the Mishnah. But starting with, let's say, if this limb is separated from this person and there's an insufficient amount of flesh on it for it to be considered a complete limb, halacha is, mitame b'maga u'b'masa, the limb will transmit tumah through either direct contact or if somebody bears its weight, and the person becomes tame from it will be tame for 7 days. However, ve'ena mitame ba'ohel, being that there is an insufficient amount of flesh in the limb for it to be considered a full halachic limb, it's not exactly like a corpse in that it does not transmit tumah through ohel. Meaning, if a person or utensil was merely under the same halachic covering as the limb, let's say they're in the same room, that person or utensil would not become tameh. But if there was a sufficient amount of flesh on the limb, then mitameh b'maga u'b'masu b'ohel, then such a limb would transmit tumah even through ohel, just like a complete corpse does. And thus, if, for example, a person or utensil was under the same covering, say in the same room as that limb, that a person or utensil would become tameh. Now, shir basar koroi, as far as what is considered a minimal amount of flesh for the aforementioned halacha to apply, the first tana of the Mishnah gives the definition as kidei lahalos arucha. It's if there's enough flesh that remains on the limb such that if the limb were to be reattached to the person, the amount of flesh that's there would be enough for the flesh to regenerate. But the first tana here just leaves it at that. He doesn't give any specific definition in terms of how much flesh is needed in order for us to assume that the flesh would regenerate. But Rabbi Yehuda gives a more specific definition as follows. He says, if there's enough flesh still on the limb that you'd be able to take that amount of flesh and take an erev's, a weft thread's width of that to circle completely around the limb, then yesh ba lahalas arucha, that would tell us that there's enough flesh there that it would regenerate if the limb were reconnected to the body, and therefore, if there was that amount of flesh, the limb would be treated like a complete corpse, and it would be metameh ba'ohel. If it was just in the same room as that limb, it would become tameh.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.